Today's broadcast was originally recorded on April 24th, 2025.
EPA will be reconsidering many suffocating rules that restrict nearly every sector of our economy.
Suffocating rules. Interesting way for the head of the EPA to describe it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Why?
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It is not.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. As we reported earlier this week, on the night before Earth Day, hundreds of workers at the Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Environmental Justice and External Civil Rights received layoff notices. Happy Earth Day.
So very nice.
We will be joined momentarily by a longtime 30-year veteran attorney at the EPA who is still, at least as we go to air, still working for the agency about some of those layoffs and what they mean for some of the Americans most affected by toxic pollution from chemical plants and oil refineries around the nation. She is also, by the way, a union official, so we will discuss what EPA workers plan to do to push back against the Trump administration's gutting of the agency, stood up by Republican President Richard Nixon, by the way. And yes, its Office of Environmental Justice was first set up by another Republican, President George H.W. Bush.
What's with all of these Republicans in the past caring about environmental justice?
In the past, the distant past, so long ago. Anyway, all that's coming up momentarily, followed a little bit later by Desi Doyen's latest Green News report. Hi,
yep.
Des.
Hi.
But of course, Trump's attacks on all elements of anti-discrimination programs of any sort within the federal government and beyond. What he and Fox News enjoy deriding as DEI, which actually stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion, which all sounds like pretty good stuff to me. His attack on that continues apace, even if courts are now beginning more and more to push back against him on those things, along with just about everything else that he's tried to do in his first nearly 100 days in office that the courts have had to push back against. But on Thursday, a federal judge blocked the Trump administration's directives that had threatened to cut federal funding for public schools with so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. The ruling came in a lawsuit brought by the National Education Association and the American Civil Liberties Union, which accused the administration of giving, quote, unconstitutionally vague guidance and violating teachers' First Amendment rights. That judge, Londia McCafferty in New Hampshire, is a Barack Obama appointee, but a second judge on Thursday, a Donald Trump appointee, Judge Stephanie Gallagher in Maryland, postponed the effective date of some U.S. Education Department anti-DEI guidance ruling in a separate case filed by the American Federation of Teachers in Maryland. In February, Trump's Department of Education told schools and colleges they needed to end any practices that differentiate people based on their race. Earlier this month, it ordered states to gather signatures from local school systems certifying compliance with civil rights laws, which the Trump administration has essentially turned on their heads in order to reject what his administration now calls illegal DEI practices. U.S. District Judge Londia McCafferty said the April letter to the schools does not make clear what the department believes a DEI program actually entails or when it believes such programs cross the line into violating civil rights law somehow. She said, quote, the letter does not even define what a DEI program is. The judge also said there is reason to believe the department's actions amount to a violation of teachers' free speech rights, saying, quote, a professor runs afoul of the 2025 letter if she expresses the view in her teaching that structural racism exists in America, but does not do so if she denies structural racism's existence. The judge writes, that is a textbook viewpoint discrimination, which, yes, is unlawful. In the ruling by the Trump-appointed judge in Maryland, U.S. District Judge Stephanie Gallagher postponed a February 14 memo from the department, formerly known as a Dear Colleague letter, which said that schools have promoted DEI efforts at the expense of white and Asian American students. It dramatically expands the interpretation of a 2023 Supreme Court decision barring the use of race in college admissions to all aspects of education, everything, including hiring, promotion, scholarships, housing, graduation ceremonies, campus life, etc. Judge Gallagher found the letter was improperly issued and forces teachers to choose between, quote, being injured through suppressing their speech or through facing enforcement for exercising their constitutional rights. Ouch. Reminder, that was a judge appointed by Donald Trump. Also on Thursday, a federal judge in D.C. has halted parts of an executive order signed by Trump that sought to require that Americans show documents proving their citizenship when registering to vote. Senior District Judge Colleen Kolar-Kotelly, a Bill Clinton appointee, blocked a Trump directive in the order that the requirement be added to a federal voter registration form that is available for most Americans to use. That's the National Voter Registration Form. If you have problems for some reason finding a way to register to vote in your state, you can use the national form. Well, that's what Donald Trump wants to change to require that it be submitted along with proof of citizenship. But the judge had a different idea. She wrote, quote, our Constitution entrusts Congress and the states, not the president, with the authority to regulate federal elections. She said, no statutory delegation of authority to the executive branch permits the president to short-circuit Congress's deliberative process by executive order. Frankly, it's one of the reasons I haven't even covered much of that executive order on this show, because it is so blatantly unlawful, unconstitutional. And now we've got the first judge to say so in D.C. on Thursday. The judge is also pausing a separate provision in the executive order that would require federal agencies that offer registration opportunities to assess a person's citizenship before they even provide a person with a voter registration form.
What does that even mean?
Means, yeah, you go, they're required, if you go to the Social Security office, to allow you to register to vote. But they're not allowed under Donald Trump's pretend order to even give you that voter registration form until they've gone through some sort of process to determine that you are a citizen.
Yeah. Oh, God.
The same judge is considering a number of other cases filed by nonpartisan groups, including voting rights organizations, several suits brought by several entities of the Democratic Party, which, unlike the Republican Party, apparently still believes in voting rights. The challengers in the cases before her targeted other parts of that anti-democracy executive order as well, including provisions aimed at punishing states that dare to count mail ballots that arrive in a certain period after Election Day, even if they are known to have been cast well before Election Day. The judge said that she was not blocking those provisions yet, because the challengers' arguments were either premature or because they are more squarely in front of other courts where they are also reviewing other lawsuits filed by states challenging the same dumb executive order. Though she didn't, the judge didn't call it dumb. I did. So on this day, at least, the courts are holding, including judges appointed by Democrats and Republicans alike, Republicans including, yes, Donald Trump, against the Trump administration's efforts to roll back and, frankly, turn upside down decades of civil rights law in this country. But apparently, that has not stopped the administration from trying to gut the Department of Justice itself in order to keep up the bad, unlawful, unconstitutional, anti-civil rights work that the administration seems to be interested in. The Justice Department is reassigning about a dozen senior career attorneys from its civil rights unit as Donald Trump's administration steers the division away from its historic priorities, according to Reuters yesterday. At least three senior career officials, non-political appointees who typically stay in the job from administration to administration, who managed offices that investigated abuse by police and handled violations of voting and disability rights, have been ordered to take other assignments. In other words, get lost. We don't need you anymore. The changes are part of a wave of reassignments and resignations affecting at least another nine attorneys at the unit, including people who worked on probes of employment or educational discrimination, abuses inside of correctional facilities, and, yes, voting rights cases. As NBC reports today, the Trump administration has quietly transformed the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, forcing out a majority of the career managers now and implementing new priorities that current and former officials say abandon a decades-long mission of enforcing laws that prohibit discrimination in hiring, housing, and voting rights. More than a dozen senior lawyers, many with decades of experience under presidents of both parties, have now been reassigned. Quote, "It's been a complete bloodbath," said a senior Justice Department lawyer in the division who is not authorized to speak publicly. Last week, President Trump's handpicked head of the division issued a series of memos outlining the new priorities. Priorities that are dramatically different from the way both Republican and Democratic administrations in the past have enforced civil rights laws, including even the first Trump administration. Rather than focusing on enforcing federal laws against discrimination, the division is apparently now charged with pursuing priorities laid out in a series of executive orders by Trump, including one called Keeping Men Out of Women's Sports. You know, the great civil rights issue of our day, and ending radical indoctrination in K through 12 schooling. The memos were issued by Trump's new civil rights division head. That would be Harmeet Dhillon, a right-wing culture warrior who represented Trump in challenging the results of the 2020 election and backed his baseless claims of fraud. Yes, she is now heading up the DOJ civil rights unit that is tasked with enforcing, among other things, voting rights laws to ensure anti-discrimination in our elections. Quote, "This is a 180-degree shift from the division's traditional mission," said a former senior official in the division who declined to be named in fear of retaliation. "These documents appear to have been created in a vacuum completely divorced from reality," the former official said. "The division can only enforce statutes that have been passed by Congress," they said, "and these orders seem to contemplate division attorneys executing on work that fundamentally departs from the division's long-standing mission." In a statement, Harmeet Dhillon portrayed the changes as just a normal shift of emphasis in a new administration and as a quest for efficiency. She added the Civil Rights Division looks forward to continuing to aggressively protecting the civil rights of Americans. But NBC News spoke to 10 different current and former employees of the Civil Rights Division for this article, and other sources familiar with the Justice Department operations. Most declined to be identified by name, citing fear of retaliation. But Stacey Young, who spent 18 years in the division before resigning in January, said, quote, "Every presidential administration has its own policy priorities, but I do not think there's any precedent for an administration almost completely refocusing the Civil Rights Division's enforcement priorities in the way that this one has. The loss," she says, "is truly hard to quantify. Vital civil rights work is not going to get done," she said. In emails that were sent late last week, according to Reuters, Dylan gave each section in the Civil Rights Division a new, quote, mission statement that she told employees would, quote, "define our expectations going forward." The educational opportunity section, for example, was told that part of its mandate is to protect the rights of girls and women to have unfettered access to sports programs that exclude males from presence or participation. Glad they're finally getting at that. The immigrant and employee rights section was told that it should investigate companies that unlawfully discriminate against U.S. workers in favor of foreign visa workers. Okay. One former department employee told Reuters, quote, "they are going to eliminate the Civil Rights Division as it was built to exist. The only person purpose now will be to victimize the very people it was created to protect." Quote, "I was there almost 18 years, and what's happening now is basically the opposite of what we have been doing," said one veteran lawyer who recently left the department. According to NBC, in the first Trump administration, this attorney said, "they engaged with us as attorneys. The political appointees were normal lawyers. Sometimes we persuaded them, sometimes they disagreed, but there was always a conversation about why and what the law required. That is not happening now," this attorney said. Quote, "they are withdrawing everything we've done and taking the opposite side on voting rights, for example," said a recently departed civil rights division lawyer. "This is not, oh, we want to do more religious cases or we want to do creative redlining cases. This is abandoning everything that we have done in the past. They are actively anti-civil rights," the attorney said, noting this didn't happen in Trump 1. Well, it's happening in Trump 2, bigly. And, of course, it's not just the Civil Rights Unit. On Tuesday, Attorney General Pam Bondi hosted a meeting of a new Trump administration task force on, quote, "eradicating anti-Christian bias." You know how hard those Christians have had it in this country for so long. Announcing, quote, "the Biden administration engaged in an egregious pattern of targeting peaceful Christians while ignoring violent anti-Christian offenses." So those are your new civil rights safeguards. Looking out for the civil rights oppression of Christians in America, at least the white ones, I suspect. Anyway, I hope to dig more into that story in the days ahead. But where the Trump administration's DOJ is gutting civil rights protections for minorities, Trump's EPA is gutting protections for the very lives of minorities, particularly in places like Cancer Alley, where minorities living close to toxic plants and oil refineries have long faced threats to their very survival at far higher rates than the white Christians that Pam Bondi seems to be so worried about and is coming to save. That story and 30-year EPA veteran Joyce Howell, who still works for the EPA but is speaking out anyway, joins us next to discuss what is now being done to the EPA's Environmental Justice Office. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
Hey, Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and the Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. From her home on Louisiana's so-called Cancer Alley, Lydia Gerard looked down at her 8-month-old great-granddaughter, as Reuters described it this week, and wondered if she will one day suffer the same fate as her many friends and relatives whose lives were cut short by the disease. Gerard lives along the Mississippi River, just a few blocks from a synthetic rubber plant that the administration of former President Joe Biden sued, claiming it posed an imminent public health hazard. Gerard, like more than 90% of people living within 1 mile of the plant, is black. Quote, "She's not even 8 months yet," said Gerard about her great-granddaughter, and has to be subject to breathing all of that, Gerard worried, referring to the plant's emissions of chloroprene, which in 2010, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency classified as a likely human carcinogen. A 2021 field study found 52 cancer cases among people living within 1 mile of that plant, a prevalence 44% higher than the national level. Cancer Alley, a nickname that dates back to the 1980s, is an 85-mile stretch from New Orleans to Baton Rouge that is home to some 150 chemical plants and oil refineries. Multiple studies over the years point to elevated health risks, including one in 2022 that found nearly every census tract in the area ranks in the top 5% nationally for cancer risk. Nonetheless, 7 weeks after President Donald Trump took over in January, the new EPA leadership withdrew that lawsuit against the plant's owners, siding with company lawyers who disputed the lawsuit's contention that emissions were linked to significant cancer risk. The Trump administration's press release announcing the end of the lawsuit said the dismissal fulfilled the president's day one executive order to eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion, and that it aligned with his EPA's new pledge to, quote, end the use of environmental justice as a tool for advancing ideological priorities. 3 environmental researchers and 5 former EPA officials interviewed by Reuters say the end of the EPA's DEI and environmental justice programs, which seek to ensure a healthy environment for minority groups that often live closest to sources of contamination, will be most felt in Black and Hispanic communities that have long endured the harmful effects of pollution. Those health inequities are the legacy of racial discrimination that was legal from the country's inception up until 1965, the type of historical injustice that so-called DEI, really anti-discrimination programs, were designed to correct. Trump has also rescinded a 1994 executive order by President Bill Clinton that directed every federal agency to develop an agency-wide environmental justice strategy to address adverse health or environmental effects on minority and low-income populations. Quote, "It's DEI being treated like a four-letter word," said Linda Birnbaum, a retired toxicologist and former director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, who spent 19 years at the EPA. She said people who are already most impacted by high pollution are going to be hurt by the loosening of regulations the most. Asked to comment on the findings of Reuters' story, an EPA spokesperson directed them to a video statement by Trump's new EPA administrator, Lee Zeldin, declaring, quote, "In practice, environmental justice has been used primarily as an excuse to fund left-wing activist groups instead of actually spending those dollars on directly remediating the specific environmental issues that need to get addressed." Well, how does Zeldin intend to address those specific environmental issues? We got a hint last month. On March 12, the new EPA unveiled what it called, quote, "the most consequential day of deregulation in U.S. history" by rolling back 31 initiatives and eliminating the agency's DEI arm and its 10 regional environmental justice offices, which worked with communities to identify and mitigate local sources of pollution. It said it has saved $2 billion in wasteful spending by canceling hundreds of grants. That, in conjunction with billionaire Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency. And then, as we reported earlier this week, the EPA informed more than 450 employees working on environmental justice and diversity, equity, and inclusion that they will be fired or reassigned as part of the Trump administration's broader effort to reshape the agency. EPA Assistant Deputy Administrator Travis Voyles sent notices late on Monday, the night before Earth Day, to staffers at agency headquarters who work in the Office of Environmental Justice and External Civil Rights, which the administration plans to close entirely, as well as those who work on environmental justice in regional offices around the country. Asked about the staff changes, the EPA's press office referred the Washington Post as well to the announcement that it made back in March about closing the Environmental Justice Division, where it noted, quote, "EPA is taking the next step to terminate the Biden-Harris administration's diversity, equity, and inclusion and environmental justice arms of the agency. This is the first step," they said, "in a broader effort to ensure that EPA is best positioned to meet its core mission of protecting human health and the environment and powering the great American comeback." Apparently, the great American comeback means making minority Americans who happen to live close to toxic plants and refineries sick again, and allowing the polluters who are killing those Americans to do pretty much anything they want, no matter how deadly, because DEI or something else they heard on Fox News. Quote, "Announcing a reduction in force of the environmental justice program on the eve of Earth Day is sick and shows exactly who they are," said an employee who was placed on administrative leave and spoke on the condition of anonymity for fear of retaliation. The EPA's Office of Environmental Justice was created in 1992 under Republican President George H.W. Bush, originally called the Office of Environmental Equity. In 1994, its name was changed to the Office of Environmental Justice after President Bill Clinton issued an executive order recognizing that pollution affects poor and minority communities much more than wealthier and white ones. But the EPA has now taken offline the webpage dedicated to a timeline of the agency's environmental justice work, and environmental justice is no longer listed on the EPA's main topic pages. Quote, "This action is necessary to align our workforce with the agency's current and future needs and to ensure the efficiency and effectiveness of our program," said the letter to workers being laid off by the Trump administration in their frankly twisted celebration of Earth Day earlier this week. Joyce Howell, executive vice president of AFGE, that's the American Federation of Government Employees, executive vice president of Local Council 238 that represents over 8,400 EPA workers nationwide, told Reuters, quote, "Decimating our agency and environmental justice workforce goes against our oath to protect human health and to keep our planet healthy and habitable for future generations." Speaking to reporters on Monday, Donald Trump's EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin acknowledged, quote, "There are communities that have been left behind that need help, but said that, quote, the problem is that in the name of environmental justice, a dollar will get secured and not get spent on remediating that environmental issue. Instead, that dollar will get spent on a group to tell us that we should be spending a dollar to remediate environmental issues. Okay. But as we asked earlier this week, what will Zeldin be spending those dollars on to remediate environmental issues? Because he didn't say, and his actions do seem to suggest that the Trump administration intends to do no such thing, as he has announced plans to cut the EPA's current budget by 65%. Joining us now is Joyce Howell, a senior attorney at EPA Region 3 in Philadelphia, and as noted, executive vice president of AFGE Council 238, representing EPA employees across the country. She's been working for the EPA in Philadelphia for more than 30 years now. Joyce Howell, thank you so much for joining us on today's broadcast. And by the way, after more than 30 years, are you still working for the EPA today amid the Trump bloodbath, specifically to the agency's Environmental Justice and Civil Rights Unit?
Well, first, thanks for having me. You know, to answer your question, consistent with my oath, I'm working for the American people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's the point of what I'm doing and why I've been so pleased and honored to have this job all those years.
So I assume you are still at the EPA. That's good news today.
Yep.
If I may ask, Joyce, what has been your specific focus as an attorney at the EPA over those many years?
Yeah, I've worked in just about every environmental statute over my career. Mm-hmm. Most recently, most of my work has been involved with hazardous waste,
mm-hmm.
RCRA, what we call RCRA Subtitle C, which is, you know, you've probably heard of it, the cradle to grave handling of hazardous waste.
Mm-hmm.
So that from the time it's created to the time it's disposed of properly, there is a kind of a plethora, really, of regulations that go around it to make sure this stuff never gets into the environment.
And
hazardous waste, you know, it's hazardous. It's not, you know, it's not the stuff you throw in the trash can. It's stuff that would be harmful to human health.
And as of today, at least, is that program still continuing as it has been for the years that you've been working on it?
Well, you know, just a full disclosure, I work full time as a union representative, as executive vice president, and I've been doing that now for about 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that if you just look at statistics, at the levels of enforcement that are going on, because that was what I did as an attorney. I enforced RCRA Subtitle C, that across the board, not just with RCRA, but across the board, the EPA enforcement program has slowed down tremendously. It's slower than what it was under Trump one. So, I would say that things have diminished quite a bit.
I think that environmental justice, as I was describing it there, I think it's something that when many people hear it, it kind of sounds like a sort of a, you know, a lefty, hippy dippy concept. Oh, environmental justice. That, of course, makes it easier for Republicans, Fox News, any, you know, enemies of the EPA out there now, seemingly including the Trump administration, to sort of demonize the idea and then dismiss it, as they are seemingly clearly trying to do here. Are you able to explain what it actually means, that phrase environmental justice, or what it means to you, and why these initiatives have been so critical for so many Americans in recent decades?
Yes, I think everyone will understand that environmental justice is just another extension of the fundamental American right to equal protection under the law. And to ensure that no matter where you live, that the laws that protect human health and the environment will apply to you.
Mm-hmm.
And environmental justice gives people the avenue to have their voices to be heard when determinations are made about where to put a factory that spews so much pollution,
mm-hmm.
relative to where they live. Or if they're already living there and there's some place nearby that impacts them, that they would be able to, as members of the public, have their voice heard with regard to the permitting of that plant, to the number of inspections that take place, mm-hmm. the oversight of any state delegated programs that are delegated from EPA to the state, so that they would be able to participate in something that's affecting where they live. So I could, it's something is so fundamental to being an American. That's how I see environmental justice. Mm-hmm.
Now, the new EPA administrator, Zeldin, suggests that these programs are actually a waste of money, essentially that they're just payoffs, I guess, to environmental organizations or something, and that these issues can be dealt with more efficiently without an Office of Environmental Justice, even while they're talking about slashing the EPA budget by some 65%. So first, I would love your thoughts on the administrator's sort of smearing of environmental justice work at the EPA, and then on how, if at all, you understand Zeldin plans to deal with these issues, if not through the EPA's EJ office.
Yeah, you know, it's a little disconcerting to think that, you know, the work of environmental justice is simply some pork barrel type of, you know, giveaway. When if that's, you know, with environmental justice, as EPA began practicing it under the prior administration, mm-hmm. permeated our everything we did. We had this awareness of, okay, what's the impact of the community on this permit, of this enforcement action? When we only have so many resources in terms of how we do outreach, mm-hmm. or how we do enforcement, how we do oversight, how we do inspections, one of the aspects of was, okay, how many people are affected and how vulnerable are these populations? And that made much more effective targeting for environmental enforcement. Mm. So that those are two aspects of it that don't even come into the equation. It was part of every workup. Like when I worked up a case, I had to look at the demographics. I had to go to our environmental justice scientists and say, this facility in this area, what's its impact on the local community? What's mm-hmm. going on? Who are the vulnerable populations? Is it, you know, in terms of expending the time and energy of the agency, you know, are we going to make the impacts that we want to make? So that's one.
And you said that was sort of an intensified focus under the Biden
yes.
administration.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. Second, I think what's being referred to are some of the grants and programs that came in under, we call it Bill and IRA, right? Two of the large spending programs, $54 billion, I think, that went through EPA mm-hmm. For all kinds of things, climate change, and also doing infrastructure to get our infrastructure strengthened because of the effects of climate crisis. But there were also in that were grants to community groups to who know what's going on in their community and how they are impacted. Mm-hmm. And so for them to be able to organize their communities and communicate with their communities in order to get information to us about how we can help them in carrying out our mission. Nothing wrong there either. I think it was money well spent in terms of enhancing communications mm-hmm. between the agency and the people we serve.
And that you mentioned, you referenced IRA there, that's the Inflation Reduction Act and other legislation during the Biden administration, where federal grants were, made for these efforts. Those two, as I understand it, have now been cut back, or at least they're trying to cut them back. Is that your understanding as well, Joyce?
It's a real mystery about what's going on with those grants, isn't it? Because
yeah.
there's been court orders saying, hey, release the money, and then they go to check, and maybe not all of it's been released, or some of it, or we're studying it to make sure we mm-hmm. get, abide by the court's order, or, turn it around and read it upside down.
Right.
that type of thing. So, there's something going on with the grants that probably deserves a little closer look.
I agree. I thought you might have some insight for me there, because I'm kind of confused what is actually going on here. Now, as far as the workers there, as I understand it, many of the EPA folks who received these reduction in force notices this week on Earth mm-hmm. Day, were previously placed on administrative leave back in February. Then they were reinstated in the course of a legal challenge, now being laid off, I guess, again via a reduction in force provision. Does that make those firings, whatever we want to call them, any more durable than what they had originally tried in February?
Yeah, I think that that what's going to happen is that a number of people got what's called they got a notice of intention to, you know, for reduction in force. Mm-hmm. A bunch of other people got notice of intention for reorganization. So I think some people are going to be reabsorbed into EPA, but I think others are going to be dismissed and they're going to lose their job. They'll be fired. A number of them. I don't think it's going to be one or two. I think it's going to be, you know, at least a couple hundred people are probably going to be fired as a result of this. Mm-hmm. And I think what's important too is to look at what's being eliminated. I mean, yeah, environmental justice is being eliminated. What are the components of environmental justice? For example, the children's health coordinators. They're reducing them down to, I think there's going to be two left. There was one in every region, and there will be two left. The rest of those positions are being eliminated.
Two offices or two people?
Two people who will do children's
health coordination for the entire country.
Yeah, that's right. 325 million people.
Okay.
That's not hard. If you divide it in half, it's less, you know.
Sure, and they're not all children, so.
Yeah, right.
Wow, okay.
Right.
And
we're the only people that do that. We're the only people that do children's health, you know, with regard to the environment, children's health, environmental coordinators that, you know, there's just no one else who does that. We do it.
Now I know AFGE has, the American Federation for Government Employees, for which you are an executive vice president, has challenged a lot of these layoffs, these reduction in forces, whatever we want to call them. Is this latest round something that you would expect, the union will also, challenge in court?
I expect we will. I expect there will be challenges to it. I guess I don't really want to say too much about it, but I mean, look, we're not going to go down. We're not going to go quietly. Let's put it that way.
Good.
The thing is, when you attack the worker, you attack the work. Mm-hmm. And we know that, I mean, you've probably heard people go on for hours about how talented the people are. You know, they're rare, the people at EPA. People in the Office of Research and Development doing original research on environmental hazards. And, you know, you heard, you know, that was leaked to the New York Times that the administration would like to eliminate that office.
Yep. They'd like to eliminate everything, it seems, which is, you know, as mentioned, Joyce Howell, you've been with the EPA for more than 30 years now. That means you survived the first Trump administration, by my math. And I realize, you know, we're just sort of 100 days in to the second administration. But I'm wondering if you can speak to, A, how you and your EPA colleagues were able to survive that first administration and how things, as you see them from your vantage point, are now different this time around under a clearly emboldened second administration of Donald Trump.
Right. Well, you know what? We do what we always do. We put our heads down. We did our work. And that's, you know, that's what carried us through. We, you know, if there were new rules and regulations in the workplace imposed, we comply with them and we, you know, focused on our work and what we came to the EPA to do. What's different now? What's different now is that besides, you know, new workplace rules and regulations that make it less pleasant, they're eliminating people, and they are, you know, taking the when people just disappear. When first it was the probationary employees, which, by the way, was on Valentine's Day. I mean, these folks, they're so on brand.
Right.
So anyway, the probationary employees, you know, just disappeared, and then it's then followed by, you know, the environmental justice people being put on administrative leave just disappear. That's very different. That isn't like we have a slowdown or we have an emphasis or de-emphasis on certain things that we're doing. This is not doing it at all. Big difference.
So it's fair to say that in that first administration under Trump, it might have been a change of focus, but many of the people were still there, were still able to do their work as best as possible. Now they're just gutting the joint, throwing everyone out. Is that how we should understand this?
Yeah, I think that's a fair description.
I noticed that a lot of folks at the EPA, when I read stories about what's going on there, a lot of the folks who spoke to the media this week about what is going on there for some of these stories, I noted some of them in the intro, but they were granted anonymity because they feared retribution from the administration. Now, you spoke on record with your own name to Reuters, and obviously you're joining us today. Do you have concern that any of that will be held against you?
I'm from Jersey.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
Jersey
but
girl.
Yeah, I'm a Jersey girl. But look, one, I speak on behalf of the union, right? And I speak of the people I represent. And mm-hmm. So I have some protections under the federal labor statute for my speech and mm-hmm. A long precedent of case law as protecting my speech on behalf of workers. As for the other, I think, it's funny. Yesterday I attended an organizing meeting and someone said, cowardice is contagious, so is courage. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, yeah, that's true. And look, for me, it's important. I mean, I haven't been at EPA for all these years just to collect a salary. I'm there because I believe in the mission. And I will tell you, every single person there feels the same, strongly the same way. We don't do it on behalf of ourselves. We do it on behalf of the American people.
And do you feel, and I realize it's early into this four-year term, but do you feel that the work of environmental justice, the office, that whatever they're doing now can somehow be rebuilt, whether it's elsewhere in the EPA, whether it's in a new administration? In other words, is there anything that they are doing that can't be undone at some point in the future?
Yeah, I think that it can be undone in the future. Part of it is, all the research is there that supports the effectiveness of doing environmental justice work. And so you really can't turn away from that in terms of like a public health good. Mm-hmm. It's all supported by the research and the findings that it's worthwhile to do.
Well, Joyce Howell, I want to thank you for your courage, frankly, in joining us. It is contagious, I think. Is there anything that sort of regular old folks out here can somehow do to help the good scientists and researchers and lawyers like yourself at the EPA who are either being laid off right now or who are still there? What, if anything, can we do to sort of help support the still vital mission at the EPA in this Trump era?
Well, I just want to say to everybody, one, thank you, because I think so many people are showing up and speaking out and contacting their elected representatives, doing the things that, are embodied in our Constitution, and they are embracing the responsibilities of citizenship, and they are bringing it forward. And I thank them for that and say, keep it up, because it seems to work. Keep it up.
Joyce Howell has been working for the EPA for more than 30 years now. She is the Executive Vice President of the American Federation of Government Employees, Council 238, representing EPA employees across the country. You can get more work, information on their work at afge.org. Joyce, really appreciate you joining us today, and I do hope to stay in touch with you in the future as all of this moves forward. Thank you again for your courage and everything you guys are doing.
Brad, thank you so much for having me.
You bet. All right, we got to take a quick break here, and Desiree, got better news for us in the upcoming Green News Report?
Not really, but okay. Hey, listen, I really appreciate what Joyce had to say about embracing the responsibilities of citizenship. That was well said.
Indeed. All right, quick break, and we are back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report right here on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. It's Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. My thanks again to Joyce Howell. I really enjoyed speaking with her.
Yeah, she was delightful.
And, of course, I always enjoy speaking with you, Desi Doyen.
I'm not nearly as delightful.
Well, we'll find out in our latest Green News Report.
New data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, has scientists ringing alarm bells about the health of the world's oceans.
Largest coral bleaching event on record, impacting 84% of the world's reefs.
They want a mine coal. That's what they love to do.
Trump says he loves coal miners, even while cutting programs that protect miners. Plus, Trump White House guts funding for federal climate and weather research.
All that gutting and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Evidently, Trump wants to convince the world that climate change is a good thing.
All that is bad is now good. War is peace. Hate is love. Higher prices or lower prices, and that thing where you bite the inside of your cheek and then you can't stop biting the exact same spot all day long is now brunch.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen. Pretty big news this week that would, in the old days, have brought out NOAA and all kinds of scientists ringing alarm bells. Not quite as much under Donald Trump.
No, sadly. Mm-hmm. But what we're talking about is globally, the world's coral reefs are in the midst of the fourth and largest global bleaching event ever recorded in history. That's according to NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, this week. The researchers found that bleaching level heat stress has impacted 84% of the world's coral reef area.
84%.
Bleaching occurs when heat stress causes the coral to expel algae that gives it its vibrant colors, weakening the coral. Last year was the hottest year on record due to man-made global warming, and much of that heat is absorbed by the oceans. That is deadly to corals, which are key to the seafood supply, tourism, and protecting coastlines from erosion.
Hey, I'm just glad there are still any scientists left at NOAA to come out with this finding.
Good point. The Trump administration has eliminated funding for the U.S. Global Change Research Program, a potentially fatal blow to the National Climate Assessment, a report mandated by Congress every 4 years that informs policymakers on the accelerating impacts of man-made climate change. Last week, NOAA reported that atmospheric levels of climate warming carbon dioxide jumped by a record amount in 2024, but the Trump administration buried that announcement, too.
Mm-hmm.
The Trump White House's proposed budget eviscerates the nation's weather and climate science agencies and its research and effectively breaks up NOAA, pushing to eliminate all of its climate research and close all of its weather, climate, and ocean research centers. The plan would also slash NASA's science budget in half and shut down a host of Earth science satellites. As Texas meteorologist Justin Ballard explains,
basically anything where the word climate kind of comes up is something that's going to be zeroed out.
Experts warn that the cuts could cripple U.S. industries, particularly agriculture, that depend on free, accurate weather and climate data and analysis, and would devastate weather and climate research as extreme weather disasters are growing more frequent, intense, and costly. Congressional Democrats say it's the privatization playbook laid out in the right-wing manifesto Project 2025, which claims NOAA is a source of, quote, climate alarmism.
Well, I heard Donald Trump didn't know anything about Project 2025, had no interest in it whatsoever.
Yeah, right. Although Donald Trump claims that he loves coal miners, his administration has slashed health and safety programs that protect miners. This month, the administration fired nearly all staffers at the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health who provide free black lung screenings and assistance to coal miners, effectively closing the program amid a resurgence resurgence of black lung disease.
Closing the program and helping to kill minors. Let's be clear about that.
And the Mine Safety and Health Administration, which protects minors against mine safety risks and disasters,
used to,
has now delayed enforcement of a landmark rule limiting miners' exposure to toxic coal dust. The Trump Environmental Protection Agency fired hundreds of staffers working in the Office of Environmental Justice and on other programs that address the disproportionate burden of industrial pollution borne by low-income and minority communities, and they did those firings on Earth Day. Trump's EPA also plans to stop collecting greenhouse gas emissions data from most industrial polluters. And finally, the world is moving ahead without the U.S. United Nations member countries this week reached an historic deal to cut emissions and pollution from the global shipping fleet. The United States did not participate.
For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.brandblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Can't stop the world. Can't stop the world. Can't stop the world. Why let's stop you? Why let's stop you?
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen.
Yeah.
My thanks as well to our guest today, Joyce Howell of the EPA and of the American Federation of Government Employees, where she is a proud, strong, brave, bold, courageous executive vice president. And to all of you for joining us today, being proud and bold enough to do so. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Those free downloads are thanks to those of you who have hit a donate button when you stop on by or who go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. You can drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. On the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. You will also find Desi Doyen there.
At Green News Report.
That's it. We will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, because we can't stop the world, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.